if you knew you couldn't fail and it and you would be excited about it, then it's the kind of thing this person was saying to challenge yourself on.
Hello and welcome everybody to episode 58 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
And we have got an interesting discussion this week. We're going to be talking all about comfort zones, partly because I had a tiny, tiny little thing that really threw me nearly off making a very big decision for a very silly reason. And I just thought, well, isn't it interesting how we have all these little thought processes that kind of throw us off? So that's really what prompted me to say, ooh, let's talk about this week. But first of all, what have you been working on?
Well, in the week that we're recording this, because we're a few days behind, obviously, I've been working with you on this pop-up group that we ran for the Art to Life free workshop, which is now over. But it was so much fun. And somebody said to me, I don't know how you're managing to do all this with everything else that you do. And I couldn't manage it every week of the year. But it reminds me again at this time of year how amazingly fun it is to be part of a community of artists. And I was thinking back that when I first came back to making art, I felt so alone at it and really didn't have anyone to talk to about it, and felt a bit weird that I was so interested in art and so passionate about it. And now it's the opposite. I feel
slightly obsessive about it, you mean?
Yeah, and like the other people around me are a bit weird. It's like the normal people are the ones I know online. And even now I am beginning to get to know real life people also, which is nice. But yeah, so it just this last week, working really hard on that to try and build that community to make sure everybody got the most out of what was being given to them for free, but really enjoying it as well.
I think you make a good point about you can't function like that all the time. And I think actually often there are lumps and bumps in these kind of projects that we do where it feels like a really good idea and then it feels overwhelming. Perhaps that's why we spoke about overwhelm last week, and you kind of wonder why you're doing it all. And then you get into this other stage where you see exactly why you're doing it all. And it was just so good, wasn't it, to see people going, oh, now I get it, because I remember exactly what that felt like. So it's just, it's a very good example of these kind of ebbs and flows that we have for reasons that we do things. But I agree with you. And actually somebody mentioned in one of them, they said, social media gets a really hard time in the media. Bizarrely. But isn't it amazing when it works like this? And I agree entirely. I think the incredible thing about social media is actually you can create your own space within it, and it's a huge support for me. Actually, I'm going to share one of those things in What's Impressed when we get onto that stage. But yes, I agree with you, it's an amazing thing. So thank you if you've been part of that.
So what about you this week?
Well, I had one of those towards the end of last week, one of those surprise things that comes out of the blue, just an email that came in for something that I can't quite tell you about yet, which is a bit annoying. But what it made me think was, because I said to her, where did you find out about me? And of course, it's this slightly convoluted trail of, I think I was following somebody on Instagram, and then I clicked and I saw who they were following, and they were following you, and then I saw your work, and then I came to your website, and then I like what you saw, and then I got in touch. And it's always like that. It's always this kind of mix of all the things that we put in place, and it feels like somebody just arrives from nowhere, but of course they haven't. They've arrived from all of that, but kind of breadcrumb trail that you've been laying and that you've been putting out in the world. So anyway, that's an exciting little thing, but it's something that's not going to be happening until early summer, but it has helped with my stand plan for Surrey because it's taken one of the paintings out of it. So that has made life a little bit easier. And that's what I've been doing. I've been getting excited about getting this new work ready for that art fair in mid-March. and that point where you have a turning point in your work, and it takes you from that position of when you're thinking, oh, is this going to work? I'm not sure if I like it. You know, how's it all going to hang together? And then I don't know what happens. Sometimes maybe it's just one painting and you start to see it all working together. And that's been happening this week. So that kind of excitement is building. And it's been really good fun. I've actually been enjoying it. Haven't had a huge amount of days painting.
Yeah, but I was going to say, I don't know how you fit any of it in, to be honest.
Well, a bit like last week, I kind of thought I could not do it. I could do all of these other things, but actually this needs to be done. This is another big thing that's happening in my art life at the moment. And, you know, I've got this big stand book, which means it's got to have finished paintings in it. So there's no choice. I've got to get on with it, really. And I've got to think ahead as well. I've got to think ahead for getting frames ordered and photography done and all of that kind of thing.
I suppose what you could have done, you could have said, oh, yes, I sold quite a lot before I even opened. Private view, first few minutes, all these sold, and this is all I've got left.
I know, but then in the back end, you see, the maths wouldn't work out on that, would it? If I hadn't actually sold them, all I've done is pay out fair money and not made the sale. So no, they do need to be there. They actually need to be there.
Okay, so now you're talking about reality versus, you know, just me trying to con everyone.
Okay, so I suppose wrapped up in that and what's led us into our main topic, I'll tell you my little story in a minute, is just this idea of stepping outside of what you currently know, and that's where things change. So this was prompted by really, really stupid little hesitancy we had. We've had to change our car recently. We had a diesel car and emission zones are coming into London. Have I told you about that?
I can't remember. I know you've told me, but I can't remember if you told us. Oh,
sorry, if it's really boring. Anyway, the car needs changing at some point in the next year. We get quite a lot of use out of our car, so it's got a good 90,000 miles on the clock. So it was a good time to do it, but we were waiting for new electric hybrids to kind of come in and be affordable and hit the second-hand market a little bit. But one of the things was our current car had a hard drive system in the audio. So when you'd put CDs in, it would say, do you want to save this? So we had a really nice collection. I had a collection that included my driving home to art fairs, or driving into art fairs to get you pumped up and put you in a good mood, music that I played coming home from art fairs if work wasn't selling to put me in a good mood, all of that kind of stuff. So it was all tied in together. The new car doesn't have that because it all assumes that you will connect with your phone. Now, I don't have music on my phone because my phone is full of photos of paintings and videos. So I'm a little bit stuck. And you know what? It nearly stopped me making the decision about buying this car. How stupid is that? But that little thing of having my music that I want when I drive, that's my comfort thing. Like when I'm alone in the car, which I love, that's my little comfort thing. So that losing that was something that almost impacted on a really big decision. Idiot, right?
Yeah, because then you thought, oh, I could just subscribe to Spotify and put all my playlists in there and listen to them on my phone.
Yeah, but I've still got to download everything, haven't I, to my phone, which takes up storage space.
Here in London? I do, because we lose internet quite a bit on the lanes here. But if you can do it via your... do you have unlimited data? Because then you could just listen to whatever you want.
No, I don't have unlimited
data. Of course you don't, because you don't splash out. Maybe you could splash out for unlimited data and then you could have whatever you want.
Tell you what my solution is. My solution is that maybe we could, as a family, get organized and buy a little mini cheap, they must be quite cheap now, iPod, and just have it for music.
Yeah.
That could work. So there's a solution. Yeah. There is a solution to it. Anyway, I was trying to think of other examples, and maybe they'll come up for us as we're talking about this, about where we've kept ourselves safe within our comfort zone and where we've stretched ourselves outside of it, and how that this has an impact on your artwork itself and also the decisions that you make around it. So actually, you came up with a very nice, you found the actual kind of definition of what a comfort zone is. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, and this was interesting because when I Googled to look around and find out more about this, I found out the description of a comfort zone. And it says this was came up with apparently by a business consultant called Alistair White. And he said a comfort zone is a psychological state in which things feel familiar to a person. They are at ease and in control of their environment, experiencing low levels of anxiety and stress. In this zone, a steady level of performance is possible.
Okay, and so I read it and I was... It's a good thing.
Well, he wasn't particularly, he was just describing it.
Okay.
But I thought, that's a good thing. I thought, well, that doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah.
But then I went on to read of a psychologist who followed him, who said that to maximize performance, you have to reach stress levels that are slightly higher than normal. This is somebody called Robert Yerkes, and he called this space optimal anxiety, and it's just outside our zone of comfort. So we know we need to feel safe. Maslow's hierarchy of needs says we need to feel safe, but he says we need to just go just outside of it. And that anxiety improves performance until a certain optimum level of arousal. And then beyond that point, performance deteriorates because you get too anxious. So I think we've all been in that situation where you're too stressed. And there's one other thing I wanted to say about this, because I found this quote, and lots of people have heard this quote before by David Bowie, but it really applies here. He says, David Bowie said, if you feel safe in the area you're working in, you're not working in the right area. Always go a little further into the water than you feel you're capable of being in. Go a little bit out of your depth. And when you don't feel that your feet are quite touching the bottom, you're just about in the right place to make something exciting. So that's the optimal level of anxiety, isn't it? That's the just outside where you want to be.
Yeah, I kind of like that, because he's talking about excitement and enthusiasm rather than stress and anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it's
but what it made me think that, like, I have definite comfort zones that I'm just not interested in challenging. But then I have areas of my life where I go way out of my comfort zone constantly. So do we need to have the safe, comfortable areas so that we can then venture out into the more exciting, shall we say, areas?
Okay, well, that's a good question. So what areas are your safe zones?
So I don't want to travel anymore. I don't want to go to new places, experience new things. Don't want to go on holidays abroad. I'm coming to stay with you in a couple of weeks. That's huge. I don't sleep in other people's houses. So I like my comfort zone of my house and where I live. But then from this base of comfort here, then I'm constantly taking all kinds of risks in my work, in my art, and in the rest of my career, my teaching, you know, asking people to be on the podcast when it's a bit scary to ask them because it feels like they won't do it, approaching people about opportunities that seem a bit too much, that kind of thing.
So why
I don't think I, sorry, I was going to say, I don't think I could do that if I was also, you know, constantly having exciting trips.
Yeah, I think that there's a point where if we're pushing in too many different areas at once, it gets a little bit difficult to manage. And I think when we, like, quite often people talk about resistance and feeling resistance to doing things and procrastination. And I think this is probably tied up with it as well, because I certainly find that I know that where there are things that I'm procrastinating on or that I'm nervous about doing, sometimes it's because the timing is not right on it or I'm not in the right energy space to do that. And yet I think we've all had experience where something has felt not right, not right, not right. And then all of a sudden there's a kind of switch in how you think about it or how you feel about it. And you start doing the thing and it's like, that was easy. And then you get in flow in this new space and you think, why did I wait so long to do that? Because that was easy. And then you kind of go chung, 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 chung through your lovely long list of things to do, or whatever area it is. You know, sometimes it can be putting off getting back to work if you've had a break for a long time. Sometimes it's techie things. Sometimes it's, you know, clutter building up around the house and you think, oh, I can't be bothered. I'm not interested in that. And then there's a kind of switch and you think, right, I'm going to do it now. And the radio goes on and off you go. And then everything looks nice again. And you think, why didn't I do that before? So I think some of it is about knowing when you are in the right energy space for doing that. And that ties back with your point about having to feel perhaps okay in other areas so that you've got that springboard to stretch out into the one thing that's really exciting for you that you want to do that's new or different.
Yes. And I wonder if there's something to that choice, like you said about the Bowie quote, of the word exciting or anxious. One of the articles I found, and I can't remember which it was, said, maybe decide if the thing that would be out of your comfort zone actually feels exciting or actually feels anxiety provoking. Mm. And I had this, we've talked about this before, but I had this last year when I had the opportunity to go to Mexico and I didn't want to go. That just was anxiety provoking. It wasn't like, I'm scared of flying, but once I get, I'll be fine. It was just like, no, I don't want any of it. So, so it just makes me feel anxious. Yeah. I just didn't want to do it. Just so the question they said to ask was, if I could take the challenge out of this, would I be excited about it? And sometimes the answer is no. Even when the challenge was gone, you just don't want that thing.
Yeah.
So then you can, but if you would be excited, if it wasn't, if you knew you couldn't fail and you would be excited about it, then it's the kind of thing this person was saying to challenge yourself on. So let's say, for example, in painting, you really want to make big abstracts, but you currently only paint really small. And you know that making big abstracts is going to involve all sorts of learning and change. And you just think, how do I even start? If you think, if I knew I could do it, would I be excited about it? And the answer is yes. Then you should probably start making small steps towards that goal.
Yeah.
Because you know that you want to do it, as opposed to if you think about it and you think, actually, no, even when I imagine that it's not hard, I just don't want the hassle of it, then don't do it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So it seems to me that there are two sides in this, which are, I don't know if they're separate or how they're combined, but you're talking about making it almost like talking yourself into it because you know that the reward at the end of it is going to feel great. So like, I remember a time when we were doing a high ropes walk when the kids were little and, oh, that's scary. Like that is, that is genuinely outside of your comfort zone. And actually there isn't really a huge amount of point to it other than proving to yourself that you know you can, or that you faced up to something that felt scary and difficult and then you get to the end of it and feels good. But when you're right up there in the middle, taking a leap, like literally stepping from one platform to another and hoping you're going to reach it, that feels really scary. But I think at that point, how much can you turn around your thinking of fear and anxiousness by consciously talking yourself into the end benefit? Because you're talking about you're not going on the trip to Mexico. That's a very logical thing. Right, me talking myself like, don't make a stupid decision about a car over something so small, that's a very logical thing. What about things where we genuinely feel like we can't do it? And I think we do come across this in our art sometimes. Like you want to make something that's a big move, and it is crazy because actually, what are you dealing with in reality? You're dealing about what's the worst that's going to happen? You use a lot of paint? It's not really the end of the world, is it?
It's not.
But do you talk yourself, I mean, can you talk yourself down? Can you talk yourself down? Or is it more about, you see, I think for me, it's been more about making small challenges in other areas where you just gradually, like a balloon blowing up, I guess, just gradually stretch little bit, so that what would have felt like stepping outside of my comfort zone at one point now feels totally okay because I've just kept practicing at it.
I think that's key. I think that's because that's how you gain the confidence, isn't it? Some things you have to just leap into because there's no other choice. Sometimes you're forced into things and you just have to leap into them and be outside your comfort zone. Like maybe you lose your job and you need to get another one and you just have to do it, and it's a job you're not comfortable with and you have no choice. But if it's something like with our artwork where it's up to us, isn't it? It's up to us to gradually move it along. And I don't think I could go from, like at the moment I'm painting, say a meter by a meter is about the largest painting I do. And in this free workshop, during that time, I was watching Nick and he's working on some like 8 feet by 4 feet paintings. I couldn't go from where I am now to that.
Yeah.
But you see, I'm saying I couldn't. I presume I could. We all could. But the jump seems too huge. That would just be intimidating. Like, okay, where would I even start?
And that's a really good point. So because the jump feels so huge, that almost means that you don't want to do that yet. So then it's looking about what is the next want? What is going to help me with my next level of want? Or yeah, if that's a want that I want at some point, what's the intermediate stage? This really came home to me. I shared a video on IG stories yesterday of this new work that I spoke about coming together. And I woke up, I've had so many messages about it from people saying things like, this is a real change for you. I can really see it. And I've just felt, do you know what? But this, I agree. I think it is a change, but it's a change that's been years coming. Sounds like it's been like, oh, come on. It hasn't. Every single stage along the way has been another step on from where I was before, like from working with tiny little 6-inch paintings on oil on board, like you say, gradually getting bigger over time, gradually getting more expansive in my thinking about my work, how many pieces I feel I can manage on one go, how just refining my thinking about what I want to do with them all. I couldn't have gone from what I was doing 8 years ago into making this work. It's the learning that happens along the way that is the point that gets you there. And what's really exciting about it then, like when I get to this point where I'm finishing this, is I'm thinking, well, what's going to be next?
Yeah.
Like that's so exciting.
And what other people do when they look at that, though, is they just see the now of yours. Or like me looking at Nick's 8-foot painting, and I think, well, I could never do that. And the now me could never do that. But the him, I've seen his little paintings he first started on when he started to paint instead of illustration, and they were small, little 10-inch square things. So, of course, it happens gradually. But I think what tends to happen is we look at someone else and say, so someone looks at your new work and thinks, oh, that's so beautiful. I could never get to that. Because they're maybe you 8 years ago. And so they're feeling like it's impossible. And then it gets scary for us, doesn't it? Then it gets like, and also not just scary, but debilitating sometimes, because you just think, well, I don't have that level of ability. So I need to go do something else because this is not for me. And I think that can be a real problem, because that's what stops us just making that little step into the next thing that maybe we can do.
But that idea that a big thing happens as a result of lots of little steps is important, because that work is the result of, I don't know, millions of, maybe not millions, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, certainly, of points of decision where I have decided to step outside of my current zone with painting.
Yes.
Where I don't know, if you look at that really big painting, you know, that started at home, I think last summer, and I had one idea for it, and it has changed so far along the way. And almost at every single stretch of that, I've had to let go of whatever my previous ideas were for the painting and just keep going to where I want to take it. And that's what's made it such a valuable painting for me. Not just that I've started with this preconceived idea and I've managed to execute it. That's a skill. But the idea of working through all of those decision points where you're challenging what you already know, that's going to be the thing that gets you somewhere new. So that's what we started off talking about right at the beginning. It's only when you step outside of what you currently know, what your current knowledge is, that's where the potential for change is. Like, I didn't know when I started that painting. That's the question. Can I work this painting? Or halfway through comes the idea, this is too... it's too busy, it's too heavy, it's too bold, I don't like it. So, okay, so I want to make a painting that's actually really soft. How can I make that beautiful on canvas that I haven't worked on before for a long time? Am I going to be able to do it? I don't know at that point. That's pushing my comfort zone. Because yeah. I'm committing to a lot of time. I'm committing to materials. I'm committing to a big space in the show. It's something at the beginning. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. So I think we've just got to do it in little stages with our work and kind of recognize almost on a daily basis where we're doing it and where perhaps we're falling into a position where we're doing things too much on autopilot. So I totally get your point about feeling like there are some areas where you want to be relaxed and comfortable. And mm-hmm. We don't want to be like stressing ourselves out all the time. But I don't think that you change unless you have those little moments where you challenge yourself
regularly. Yeah, I think that's true. And I think it comes into then, where do you want to change? So, you know, I have friends who travel all the time. In a lot of cases, they don't particularly love where they live, or where they live stresses them out to some extent, and the holiday is a way to get away from that. I absolutely love where I live, and where I live doesn't stress me out. I don't, when I go somewhere else, I'm always disappointed. And also I spent a lot of my younger life traveling all the time, on and off planes, going it all over. And I don't want to do that anymore. But in my work, I really want to push it and change. And so if I find myself, not just in the painting, but in the business side of things, in this podcast, I want to push everything to be better and different. And the only way to do that is to go outside of what you're comfortable with. And so, but this brings something up, which some people might be thinking. I sometimes get frustrated with myself because in my painting, I never settle long enough to just be in that first description that the business consultant gave of performing well and comfortably without any anxiety and stress. Soon as I get to that point and I'm like, okay, what's next? Let's try and push this further. And sometimes I wish I would just have a year maybe of producing comfortably.
Give over. You'd never stay put on the same. Wouldn't.
But it would be nice. It would be so nice. I remember once when I was a teenager, I met someone and I told a boy and I told my mum, and he's lovely and he's really calm and stable and steady and he's just really lovely. And she said, and you think you're going to stay happy with someone who's calm and steady and stable?
Yeah, you'll be bored with him in 2 months. How long did it last?
Not that long. Yeah, she was annoying that way.
Yeah, that's mum's jobs, isn't it, really? No, I think you are right. I mean, that's why we can't come back to this idea of like always wanting to be pushing, because that's when we get kind of burnout and exhaustion, and then it stops being fun. Maybe it's just about making sure that in a creative cycle you do have time to appreciate your work. I think that's part of always being in this step of change, to appreciate that you are where you are now. You know, there are things that have come before and there are things that are going to come ahead, but you can enjoy what you've got for the moment. And I think this is a big mind thing that I know that I've certainly come over, is that if I waited until every painting was perfect before I showed it, I wouldn't be where I was. If I waited until I felt 100% confident every time I showed my work, I would never have done any of the things that I was doing. And I love these paintings that I've done at the moment, but I probably won't in a year's time, because I'll be doing something different. But the yeah. something different will only happen as a result of what I've done now. So it's just this kind of, it's a perpetual motion thing, isn't it? But maybe at a speed that's not exhausting. Is that the thing?
Have you ever had a period of time in the last 5 or 6 years where you have had, say, a year of just producing comfortably without pushing? Or has it been incremental all the time pushing?
I thought you were going to ask, have I ever had a moment in my life where I've happily just lived in my comfort zone?
Well, I can ask you that as well, if that's a better question.
Work-wise, no, the closest I can, when you say that to me, the closest that I can think of to that was at a time when I felt my work wasn't changing very much and it didn't feel like a comfort zone. It felt stagnant.
Right. And
that's a very different feeling. That wasn't fun at all. That really wasn't fun at all. This is the thing, is that in the work, I'm quite happy for it always to be changing. In my life, much like you, I think there are things that are comfortable. My home is generally comfortable. It's got a little bit more comfortable now that I've accepted that in the winter I turn the heating on, not just put a woolly hat on and be cold.
Oh my goodness. People in England and their heating, they make me laugh.
It's all right, I'm over that.
Honestly,
one.
People from anywhere else in the world, this is something you won't understand. And when I got back here, it took me a while to get back used to it. But when it's cold in the house, the first thing British people think is put on some extra clothing, not turn on the heating.
Yeah, that's
and when you have... When we you have a nice, warm, comfortable house, people are like, oh, it's too hot in here. What?
We have such badly insulated houses there. Your house is a conversion. Yeah. It might be well insulated. We're living in a 1903 house, and when you put the heating on, it just goes straight out through the brick walls.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does get tricky. Anyway, yeah, no.
Anyway, sidetrack.
Definitely some comfort things that we need to spring off. Okay, so maybe we should round this up with a couple of questions that we could copy into the show notes if you want to do a little bit more on this. So do add to this, Louise. This is what I've come up with as questions as we've been talking before we started. So what areas are your current comfort zone? So where are you operating within a comfort zone? And is this where you want to be? So there might be different areas of your life that you're happy to stay in a comfort zone, and certain areas that you want to push. And there might be ideas, like Louisa said, that there are some places where you need to be in a comfort zone so that you can go on and make those brave moves from a point of safety. Having everything in the danger zone, not going to be good for you. So which areas are which in your life? So the next question then are things to do with what might be holding you back. So my question is, how am I feeling about this? So when you notice something that feels like you're stepping outside of your comfort zone, just check in with how you're feeling about this. And the question really to ask about it is, what beliefs that you've got, or what beliefs am I holding that's keeping me within this energy space? So this is this idea of not being ready to move into something. And then we've all experienced where something suddenly changes and you feel like, okay, that's great, I can do it. So what is it? What are the beliefs or the ideas that you've got that are stopping you from making the move that you need to do to take you into this new zone? Following on from that then is, looking further ahead. So this is a little bit more of a kind of overcoming it with head thoughts. Where might it take me? So this is allowing yourself to dream a little bit. What would be the long-term benefit from doing this? So we're not thinking of the short-term discomfort. We're thinking of the long-term element. Hate to say it, everybody, but we were watching Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop again last night, and there was a guy.
Once is excusable, twice is just no. There's no excuse.
Again, suggestion from him next door. Here, my husband, who said, I need to know some of this stuff that goes on in the world. I'm like, okay. Anyway, yesterday was a guy. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. I will try and find out. But he was talking about ice bathing and how it actually changes the physiology of your body. So when you do this system of breathing and the cold water, what it does, the breathing actually changes your body to alkaline, which affects the way that your body can adapt to stress. So I think that is fascinating. I'm not going to go to Canada and jump in a freezing cold lake to experience it. But just this idea that we can make changes that may mean that we are easier to adapt to different situations, I think is really fascinating one. So then the last one is, where am I overcomplicating this? What blocks are you putting in your way? And how could you make it easy? We've spoken about how could I make it easy before. I think it's something we've both done a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's overcomplicating things is my superpower. I'm really good at that. And I have to constantly stop and ask myself, what would it be like if it wasn't so hard? And I can usually find a bunch of things that I've put in the way.
Yeah.
Those are really good questions.
I think it is a really weird, twisted up heart and head thing, though. And I think if you can try to think about it from both sides together, identify what the feelings are, where they're coming from, and then also think with your kind of slightly more grown up adult brain about where it might take you.
One other question I thought of, which is along the same lines, but I've heard this idea from other people before, of what's the secondary gain? And So the secondary gain is the reason why you might be holding on to a certain way of being. So you might think, I really want to paint much bolder. What's the gain in not doing it? And when you can identify that, you can kind of start to override it with these other questions. So if if the gain is it's keeping me safe because I don't, but you've asked yourself, what do I really want? Where might it take me in the long term? Now you can challenge that idea of being safe, because safe isn't really what you want in the long term. Does that make sense?
Okay, so talk a bit more about that. So the secondary gain is actually the thing that's keeping you where you are.
Yeah, so they often talk about it in terms of addiction. So let's say you smoke and you really want to stop smoking because you know it's bad for you. But you can't. Well, the reason why you can't is that for your brain, there's a gain there. There's something that you're, some benefit you're getting from staying where you are.
Okay. So it might be that smoking gives you social community and a chance to step outside the office and chat with your friends, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. You might think, if you're younger, you might think it makes me cool. You might think it's the only way I can relax. So once you know what the gain is, that's what's holding you there, because your brain is just designed to keep you comfortable. And so it will keep trying to bring you back to a place of comfort. And it thinks that smoking is good for you because it thinks it's doing those things for you. And so you have to challenge it by making it so it doesn't make you comfortable, or something else makes you comfortable. And I think the same applies to stepping outside your comfort zone. So what is the gain for you of not getting bolder with your artwork and then challenging that? Is that really a gain? The gain is it keeps me safe. It keeps my work selling. Maybe I can provide the same work to the gallery that I always provide and they can always sell it. That might be one. Or the gain might simply be, I know when I go in the studio, I'm not going to fail. And I like that feeling of not failing.
Yeah.
So So then you challenge that with your question. Yeah, but where might it take me if I were to let go of that guaranteed result? It might take you somewhere that you want to be. So it's really just about challenging those ideas. But unless we challenge that secondary gain, we can't ever overcome it because we're not aware of it.
Sounds good. I think that, yeah, that makes total sense, actually.
By the way, people, I am not a psychologist, so if I just butchered that, I apologize. I know what I'm trying to say.
But I think it's just when you recognize it, isn't it? All of these things, when you hear something and you think, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I recognize that. That makes sense for me. Then it's something that's useful that you can kind of put into action. You know, actually, the whole point, okay, fine, you might need to be a psychologist to really understand it, but you don't really, do you? It's just about human experience at the end of the day. Okay, so let's go on then. What has inspired you this week?
Oh, well, something quite exciting came out of the Creating the Impossible project. So we talked about that a few weeks ago, the Michael Neal book. And when we talked about it, I said, maybe my impossible project would be to write a book. And then the week after I said, oh, I don't think so. But I had somebody came to me with a really interesting idea as a result of hearing me talk about it on the podcast. Now, I'll explain all about it if it actually comes to anything. But it would be a way of me doing a book, which was totally different than anything I had ever imagined. And it really got me excited again, this realizing that all that stuff does work. The stuff he's saying in the book, if you make the space for something, if you allow the possibility, and if you speak it out loud, then things start coming to you, and they might not be what you originally envisaged, but they might be better, or they just might be different. The whole idea of letting go of preconceived notions about things and control about things, that thought of writing this book has always felt a bit too much to me, a bit too stressful with everything else, a bit too much. After I got off a phone call with the person who had got in touch with me, I wrote a whole synopsis. It just flowed out of me, the what it would be about and how long it would be and what it would look like. All just came really easily, and it didn't feel easy before. So it's really got me excited. So I'm going back to the beginning of that book now, and I'm going to actually, because I'm nearly at the end, I'm going to work through it with this project in mind and see what happens.
That is so exciting, but it's also a really good example of what we were talking about, how something feels not right, and then it can be a switch and suddenly your energy is in the right place and all of a sudden you just make a start on it.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
Who knows? We will see. Nothing's definite yet, but it's exciting.
But the point is that even if it doesn't end up being the book that you are now thinking that you might be writing, it will end up being something else. So it doesn't matter.
Right at the end of the Michael Neal book, he has I've just read a section called Riding the Wave, and that's exactly what he talks about. He says, perhaps your original idea after the 90 days that you've been working on it ends up not being the right idea, or you've got bored of it, and he says, but you can take that energy and then just ride that wave and keep going, creating something else new, which I really like that idea. So, yeah. Anyway, so that's my inspiration for this week.
Okay,
so what's yours?
It's kind of similar in the sense that it's ideas spark ideas, and it was a conversation that I was having with somebody. I can't remember if it was messages after story, but people often ask me, how do you deal with edges of the painting? So are you going to frame this? And I said, no, I'm not going to frame this one because it's a diptych, so I don't want to have a barrier between them. I usually just paint the edges. And the conversation was, she said, oh yes, and she sent me a photograph, and I'm really sorry, I forget who it was, with the edges painted a kind of dark rust red, which totally made sense for her painting. I tend to keep my edges either off white or off black so that the lightest or darkest points are within the painting itself. But just having this conversation just made me think, oh, what if instead of brick red, I just paint this one edge neon orange? Now, neon orange is kind of not my thing. It hasn't been my thing at all. We've had this conversation about neon, but there has been this little vivid orange that's kind of appeared. And it started off appearing quite gently and quite slowly as an underlayer. And then it's coming back. And I thought, actually, it would be cool. Not all the way around the painting, just one edge down the side. And I thought, oh, I don't know, that's really brave. And then somebody said, it's only paint. Of course it is.
I was covering it up. Yeah.
I can paint it. And if I don't like it down the edge, I can put it back to just off white vanilla, literally. you know, how it would have been before. What have I got to lose? Nothing. Half an hour painting an edge. That's it. So I've painted it. I love it. It's staying.
Good.
So my inspiration is these little lovely spark moments that happen on social media and sometimes pick you up when you're down. And, you know, sometimes they're just there for the chat, but sometimes it does spark an idea which really makes a difference. So thank you very much for that. I'm excited. So before we finish, if you are listening to this live as it's going out, this is just a reminder that CVP 2020 is open now, but only for the next 2 days. If you've been in our buddy group and you would like to join CVP and be in our new group, you can find all the details to that on both of our websites. That's alicesheridan.com and louisefletcherart.com, and just look for the information on CVP. If you just want to find out more about what CVP, the program, entails, you can go directly there and there's all the information about what the whole program contains. And you can find that at bit.ly/CVP2020. So do go and take a look, because this could really be the year that your art rockets.
And if you are going to join, do not forget to come and join us in the buddy group on Facebook, because which there'll be a link in the show notes, because we're really excited about that, and we're going to be in there all of the time and there for extra support and guidance. But it's not just us, it's the community that forms. It's a nice, intimate, smaller group of people who are all going through the same thing, and you make friendships in there that last, well, for me, I've lasted several years now since I first joined your first buddy group.
Yeah.
I still know some of those people, and it's great to see everybody's careers developing.
Yeah.
So come in and join us.
Yeah, but that's not an official part of CVP. That's just something that we're doing extra. So if you want to be part of that, join up through the links that we've given you. Okay, we will see you again next week. Not sure what we're going to be talking about next week, but we do have a couple of really great podcast guests coming up. So we've got some good things in line. And in the meantime, have a happy week painting. Bye.
Bye. So you have this fancy thing over your microphone now. What's that?
I don't know what's it called. It's called a pop filter.
It's so great. It stops you going pop.
Well, let's see, shall we? Pop, 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 pop. Let's see what comes out on the recording. I don't know.
It sounded good from here.
Did it?
Yeah.
It's
so
very
good. Is that just clipped onto something else above the microphone?
It's clipped on to another little wiggly arm stand, which actually brings it up to head height, because those little stands that we had before, I was like crouching over like a hobbit. Well, how it worked before, the mic stand was on a pile of books, then I couldn't access my keypad. But
I have to reach up to get. Yeah, I have to reach up to get to my computer from here around the microphone. If people could see, it's really not high tech.
Well, it sort of looks high tech, because I've got, you know, there's various kits, but it's also on a desk that's got self-leveling gel, wax, studio notebooks, all sorts of other things going on as well. So it's all a bit of a mess. And also the other thing with this pop filter is it's fine, but it's kind of in front of my face, which makes it a little bit difficult to see the screen.
It looks very trendy and professional, though. You look like when you see people podcasting on YouTube, proper podcasters, that's what you look like.
I'll just better make sure it's switched on then, haven't I?
Well, I've gone up a few notches in my little neighbour's estimation, because when he was around, he said, why have you got a light like a YouTuber?
That's like, it, is it?
Because I am a YouTuber.
You can be a YouTuber for $17.99. Amazon.